Well, the mics are back on. That means we're radio entrepreneurs, and we're spending all our time talking to entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis. Welcome back to all. Our next guest, Mike Volpe, CEO, Lola.com.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, no, you got it. You nailed it.
You know, you make me remember the movie that I used to love, Run, Lola, Run.
Yes.
Have you seen it?
That I have a long time ago, and... The other thing is the Kink song that always comes to mind for people, too.
That's probably much more mainstream than what I just said. My movie was, you know, subtitled.
Yeah, right. Foreign film.
But it was a great movie.
Yeah.
A classic.
Yes.
But tell us about your Lola.
Yes. Our Lola, Lola.com, is we do corporate travel software. So we help companies save both time and money when it comes to managing all of their business travel.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, come on. You got to give me more than
you
that.
You want more? Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, so our belief is that there's a lot of systems out there for big companies. So huge corporations have kind of big enterprise systems that are clunky and hard to use. And what's happened with a lot of these mid-sized companies is they don't have a good system for them. So they don't have something that's fast and easy to implement that the individual travelers actually love to use. So big companies force their business travelers to use systems that are really hard to use. And our philosophy is it doesn't have to be that way. So we've built from the ground up a consumer quality, delightful tool for the travelers to use that gives the finance team the sort of control and visibility they need. So companies can go in, set up a travel policy, decide how much people can spend on air and hotel and things like that. And then employees have this wonderful mobile app or desktop. They can do either one, book their travel, manage it. We do 24/7 support while they're on the road. And you know, it's been great. I've been there for less than a year and we've grown from, you know, basically zero customers to hundreds of customers.
It's B2B, correct?
Yeah, we're B2B. So we sell to other companies, typically small to mid-sized companies, people with maybe 50 to 500 employees.
Not me.
Really our sweet spot.
Right.
I'd say normally the very small businesses often are happy with consumer tools. So things like Kayak and Expedia. But we found that the little bit bigger businesses really have a need for something that centralizes it and gives the company a little bit more control.
You know, I was thinking about some of the nonprofits, the large nonprofits that are doing a lot of what I would call affinity travel as a way of building loyalty.
Yeah.
So you could work with companies like that, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure we have a couple. The customer base is so big now. I'm sure we have a few nonprofits on board, and I think it would be a great solution for them because you're right. A lot of them have some people doing some traveling around and things like that, and they obviously want to be very conscious about their spending and make sure they're saving money.
Well, the affinity travel is just a big part of maintaining culture and loyalty of their donor base.
Yes.
That's what they're doing. They're building basically social clubs.
Yes. Yes.
That's their job. You know, let's go in the Wayback Machine, Mike. Let's talk about your career, you know, how because it's relatable to what you're doing now.
Yeah. I mean, I've done a lot of things. I've mostly spent most of my career in software and, you know, marketing software. So, you know, I've done marketing for engineering software, sold CAD software to engineers, marketing software, cybersecurity software. And I really think I've had the most fun when I've been able to do sales and marketing related things for small and medium sized businesses. That's a really interesting segment of the market. And so, yeah, I've spent a bunch of time doing that.
Interesting. And you've done it for some major companies, correct?
Yeah. I mean, you know, SolidWorks was kind of where I started after business school. And that's now part of Dassault Systems, which is a multi-billion dollar company. They're actually one of the, I think SolidWorks, that division of it, is one of the larger employers in Massachusetts now. And then HubSpot, I was part of the founding team there very early, part of the first four people. And that's now a publicly traded company, I think around 8 billion market capitalization with, I don't know, 2,500 or 3,000 employees. So that was a fun thing to be part of. And then, you know, Cyber Reason, the company I was at previously, cybersecurity software, which is obviously a very hot space. You know, that company has grown from around 100 people when I joined to, I think, around, you know, about 400 employees now, and they're doing very well. And then, you know, Lola. We were 60 people a year ago. We just passed 100. We should be about 120, 130 by the end of this year. So it's fun to be part of these really interesting startup growth stories.
Well, with your background, VC backed?
Yeah. Oh, we're VC backed. Yeah.
You seem like a serial VC guy.
I seem like a serial VC guy. Yeah. Yeah. It's, it's interesting because I have a ton of respect for the entrepreneurs who really bootstrap things and figure out ways to self-fund and be far more efficient.
That's me.
That's you. Yeah, no, I mean,
that's
I think
my
it's,
world.
It's really interesting, the path of maintaining a ton more ownership and being more efficient. I actually think there's a good chance I would take that path in whatever the next thing is.
Right.
But yeah, I got kind of sucked into that VC-backed world early on in my career. And the good thing about that, as you know, it's like a lot of your career is about like what networks you build and sort of you end up in certain groups and they kind of plug you into new companies and introduce you to new people and new opportunities. So yeah, we've raised $82 million from General Catalyst, Accel Ventures, CRV, Google Ventures, Tenaya Capital. So we've got a long list of investors that are kind of, you know, definitely giving us the funding we need to grow.
I don't want you to, you know, badmouth old dates, but, you know, for those entrepreneurs listening, who don't want to go down my route of self-funding and building your company that way, what are the do's and don'ts you know now about self-funding, about going out for money, that you'd like to tell some young VCs?
Yeah, so young entrepreneurs that are looking to potentially raise VC.
Yeah, don't do this, don't do that, don't give into this, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the biggest things are just really make sure you understand what you're doing and what you're getting into, because in many cases, the company is really no longer yours.
Mm-hmm.
And when you bring on some of these partners, because a lot of times they're writing very big checks and they're often buying majority stakes in the business. So just understand that. And I'd say along with that comes with really understand who you're getting into business with. I think a lot of times you can get a term sheet and get a potential investment without having spent that much time with one of these investors. And you would never start a company with somebody that you've met five or six times in a 2 or 3 month period. But in actuality, you should see them as that relationship needing to be as important as a co-founder kind of relationship. And so I think I would take time to really get to know people. I would make sure I do some sort of kind of background checks, like call other companies that you know that they've invested in, good ones and bad ones, and really get a view from those entrepreneurs what it's been like to work with those investors. It's really about diligencing the people and the relationships. And it's easy for investors to be good and behave well when things are going well at the company. What you really want to find is an entrepreneur who's been through some real tough times in the business and ask them how the investor was helpful or not, and were they supportive or not, and sort of how they behaved at that time.
You know, I just recently did a road trip north to south, or south to north, south to north. And, you know, every day I got in the car, turned on my phone, and went to one of those websites, travel websites that you mentioned, and got myself just, I don't know if they're always great deals, because, you know, it's harder in New York, but for where I want to go.
Yeah.
But got some great deals, great hotels, great reviews. You know, the technology is just unbelievable today.
Yes.
You know, the way, you know, my wife has a degree in hotel management, amongst many things. You know, her idea of a trip is planning it out, you know, a year in advance, 6 months in advance. You really don't have to do that anymore. Where's the technology going? What am I going to see in the next 36 months? You know, you must know, because you're, you know, behind the curtain.
Yeah, I think, you know, within the world of travel, it's interesting. So our co-founder, Paul English, he was co-founder of Kayak. And, you know, back when he started that business, just the idea of a really fast meta search engine that would search all the different sources of, you know, air and hotel from across the web and bring that into one place was a revolutionary idea.
Unbelievable.
That's no longer revolutionary.
No.
Like that's
there's now
commonplace.
A lot of apps do that.
Exactly right.
I compare apps. I go from app
to app and things like that. Yeah, exactly. So I think a lot of the things coming down the road are on the airline side, it's interesting because they're trying to figure out ways to sort of segment and doing a lot of different pricing strategies. They've launched things like basic economy, which is a new class of service on most of the major airlines where it doesn't include a bag. It doesn't include overhead space.
Right.
It doesn't include a seat in advance. You can't change the ticket at all. Like there's
cheapo,
the change
cheapo.
Fee. I mean, yeah. And these are major airlines.
Talk
like
about
American
no
Airlines
frills.
And people like that are launching those because they're trying to really price discriminate and sort of get into every aspect of the market. So for the people that
really
want to spend
the minimum,
they want
to fill those open seats.
They want to fill the open seats, and they want to, you know, have, if somebody wants to spend $150, they want an option for them. Somebody wants to spend $250, $500, $1,000. Like they really sort of want to spread things. And we're seeing those types of things sort of spread out more and more of airlines breaking the ticket and the idea of air travel into many different pieces. So in the past few years, it's been baggage fees and things like that. And you're starting to see that come to hotels. I don't know if you're in a recent trip, if any of the hotels charge you resort fees. that used to be something that was only on resorts.
Right.
I was at a hotel in San Francisco recently, and they charged me a resort fee for free coffee in the lobby, for the Wi-Fi, and the fact that they had a gym on site, which to me are normal things that a hotel would often have, yeah. right? But it was $29 right. a day resort fee. It was about 10% of the cost of the hotel. And so you're seeing a lot of the people, the airlines and hotels have been really squeezed by all these pricing engines that have helped people find the lowest possible price. So they're all trying to find ways to charge for things outside of the core offering so they can improve their profit margins.
You know, I think, you know, originally how it started, it was around discounting for me.
Yes.
But when I did this road trip,
yeah.
I found the most high-end, funky hotels every day in every city that I never would have found in the past,
yes.
from a Condé Nast or one of those types of places. I mean, I found truly memorable hotels that, you know, just were, you know, somebody wanted to make something special and unique in each city, and I found it because of these apps.
I love boutique hotels, and I think you're right. It sort of really leveled the playing field on the hotel and accommodation side, right?
Right.
And then even look at Airbnb. They've launched a big Airbnb for business,
right.
Airbnb for work effort,
right.
And trying to encourage people to use Airbnb for business travel, which I think in some cases it can be good, especially a little bit longer stays and certain destinations and things like that. I think if you're doing a night or two in, you know, New York, San Francisco,
it's
Chicago, it's not as good.
But if you wanted to go to London for 3 weeks. Or
if you were going to do a project someplace.
A month,
yes, it's fantastic for that. And imagine that's a totally new, unique sort of experience.
Right.
And you see actually hotels starting to sort of see that model be successful. And there's some hotels that are starting to have every room be much more unique. So unlike, you know, checking into the Marriott and like all the rooms are basically the same, they're starting to design the rooms individually and try to rent them individually, almost like Airbnb style.
Well, I won't take down Marriott right now because I have an opinion, but if I'm going to travel, why would I want to go to a hotel that I could go in every city? I want to see something unique in that town that's
yeah.
custom for that
town. I think
town.
That's right. I think a lot of people, I think it used to be you wanted just the same experience and didn't want to
Give
be surprised by anything. But now because of reviews, you're more willing to take a risk, I think. And I think that's actually advantage
Absolutely.
A lot of the smaller boutiques.
Yeah. Oh, and I love it. It's exciting.
Yeah, it is. It's cool.
It's
cool.
Everybody, we've been speaking with Mike Volpe. The time has blown away. Mr. Travel just blew away our time. Mike, if somebody's looking for you on Lola.com,
yeah. I mean, it's easy. Lola.com is obviously the place to find us. You know, we're on Twitter, Instagram, all those places. But just, yeah, go to Lola.com. You know, our pricing is very affordable. It's really made for small and mid-sized businesses. And you can go there and also check out all of our reviews. Our customers have some amazing things to say about us. We have over 100 reviews on the different review sites. And our average rating is 4.8 out of 5 stars.
Well, I guess
so we've built something customers love.
I'll end with my starting point. I'm going to take from the movie. I'm going to say, you know, we should run to Lola.com.
Love it.
Run Lola.com, run. we're going to take a break. This is Radio Entrepreneurs.